One problem was that abolitionists in the North were seen by many to be extremists. Thus, there was a danger of readers resisting the book's message. But here again, the novel's scope proved to be the key. As the dramatic, even melodramatic, narrative, the comic interludes, the wide variety of characters, all enabled readers impervious to the novel's message, ironically its sole reason for existence, to enjoy it simply as a story, to separate out the novelistic elements from the polemical elements. This is one of the many reasons why the book retained its popularity long after slavery ended. For many people, the vivid characters and the gripping story transcended the genre of the sentimental novel or the protest narrative. This gave rise at the time, however, to accusations that the book was purely fiction, and Stowe even found herself threatened with a libel suit. Challenges to the book's veracity, especially by Southerners, were by no means the only criticisms, despite the book's continuing monumental success. Although few African Americans of the time were able to read it, as literacy was officially illegal for slaves, some free blacks were nevertheless among the first to voice the complaint later taken up by 20th century African Americans, namely that "she knows nothing about us," as the writer, political activist, and explorer Martin Delaney said in a letter to Frederick Douglass, who had consulted with Stowe and from whose experiences Stowe had taken some of her ideas. There were objections, for example, to Tom's apparent acquiescence in martyrdom. His character was designed by Stowe to highlight the atrocity of slavery through the experiences of a man who intends only good, even toward the race that enslaves him, as when he rescues little Eva from drowning, for instance. Plays by all the rules without complaint, and yet he still dies a brutal death. Yet the outrage this was intended to evoke, and did for the majority of readers, evoked a different kind of outrage among those who saw Tom as entirely too subservient, unwilling to rebel or even to speak out against the unconscionable demands made on him. Thus, in future generations, to be called an Uncle Tom in the African-American community was not a compliment, but an accusation of complicity in white stereotypes of subservient blacks. Similarly, his wife in the book, Aunt Chloe, came to be perceived by many as an Aunt Jemima figure. Others resented the way in which the book stressed black dependency, as whenever slaves attempt escape, it's always with the assistance of well-meaning whites. Stowe's intention here was again to show the interconnectedness of races, but to a number of readers, it seemed to emphasize white superiority. For these and for other reasons, in later years, African Americans responded to the novel in ways that challenged its premises.
He's not the figure that was used to scare white people of the, you know, which I hate even saying, but it really was widespread, the idea of the black man who will, you know, rob you and kill you in your sleep and rape your daughters. Just, you know, he was the antithesis of that. So,
yeah.
And I guess Stowe knew that, too. That's why she used that form of character. Say, oh, see, not all black men are dangerous, you know, sexual beings. They can be almost impotent and gentle and Christ-like, like Uncle Thomas, selfless, pacifist, and that sort of thing.
This is still a point of contention, but Stowe's own background, intended purpose, and intended audience should at least be borne in mind here. Her book is essentially a romance, albeit a polemical romance. Thus, the rules governing the realistic novel are not always applicable. This does not necessarily excuse some of the assumptions and stereotypical thinking which she, as a white, middle-class, gently-reared New England lady, brought to the book. It's understandable, perhaps, but not inevitable. The book's ending was also a source of controversy. The reformists with whom Stowe mostly associated opposed the colonization movement established in 1816, which aimed to assuage slaveholders' fears of insurrections led by free blacks by organizing a system whereby freed men and women would be repatriated to Liberia, West Africa, as would eventually all African Americans should abolition be enacted. The immediatist reformers with whom Stowe sympathized saw this movement as being solely for the benefit of white Americans by removing an uncomfortable problem elsewhere, whether those being colonized wished to go or not, Africa, after all, being a distant ancestral memory for many. The benefits, as the American Colonization Society saw it, were that America would then be white and Africa Christianized. Yet at the end of Uncle Tom's Cabin, George Harris and family embark for my country, my chosen, my glorious Africa, which, following the death of Uncle Tom, is the book's happy ending. Thus, Stowe appeared to be endorsing colonization, solving the race problem by removing those of another race entirely. Yet the book's ending is somewhat more ambiguous than that. George refers to Africa as his chosen country, indicating that this is a personal choice. And this scene is followed by another where George Shelby tells his now freed slaves that there's no need for them now to leave, should they wish to continue in their former capacity as free wage earners. George Harris himself argued for the former slave's right to freedom in the United States before announcing his own choice of Liberia, a country, a nation of my own. Many critics have suggested that Stowe shared the same problem as other abolitionists of the time, namely, an inability to imagine what America might be like after emancipation, how thousands of freed slaves, lacking education and skills, were to be integrated into American society. Stowe thus hedges her bets at the end of the book by presenting essentially two possibilities: African Americans being removed from the picture entirely, or former slaves essentially continuing as before, voluntarily enacting the roles into which they had previously been forced. Try as she might, it was impossible for Stowe in 1851 to envision a society in which those of African descent played an equal role to whites. Over 100 years later, some Americans still had trouble with the notion. But whatever form it should take when they got it, there was no mistaking that the book's final message was that slaves deserved freedom, and the symbol of that freedom was the title of the book. George Shelby tells his slaves that Uncle Tom had inspired him to free them. The view constantly stressed by abolitionists such as Garrison had been that slavery was inconsistent with Christianity. Stowe ended her book by stressing Tom's Christian martyrdom and appealing to her readers' religious and moral principles as well as their emotions. It was an irresistible combination, and the book became by far the abolition movement's most powerful tool. When, during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln said, on being introduced to Stowe, "So this is the little lady who wrote the book that made this big war," he was obviously exaggerating her influence, but not by as much as might have been expected. The Civil War had all sorts of contributing factors, many of them economic, but the one that the ordinary reader in Boston or Philadelphia or London could understand and care about most was the one Stowe exposed in Uncle Tom's Cabin. And long after the abolition of American slavery, the book's depiction of man's inhumanity to man has continued to strike a chord with readers.